FYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stones.
Perceptia here. Welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus star?
Ratchet, will you take the chorus star?
Transformers, defenders of truth, robots who fight in disguise.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, TFYLP, episode number 215, recorded September 2nd, 2016. I am your host, Deron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf. Along with me this evening is Brett, a.k.a. Megamus.
Hello.
Chad, a.k.a. Trans Jazz.
Hi, everyone.
Joining us this week are very special guests from the Hot New Machinima series, Transformers Combiner Wars. A lot of people have been watching this on the Go90 app and Go90.com. I believe we're five episodes into the series now, and we have several people from the show that you may recognize. Mr. John Bailey, a.k.a. Optimus Prime from the show. Great. Welcome. Lana McKissick, is that correct? And she's froze up now. Oh, no. Oh, no. she will be with us shortly. And also Jason Mernocha, he is Megatron from the series. He is having some audio issues. Hopefully he's able to join back with us very shortly. And hopefully Lana can get back with
us. I'm back.
Yes. There we go. Ms. Lana McKissick, is that correct? All right. You are the Mistress of Flame on Combiner Wars. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I know you're actually pressed for time tonight because you have a live performance to go. So we'll talk to you first, and then we'll talk with you and the other guys here. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in the business.
Sure. Well, I was born in Los Angeles, so that kind of means I was forced into the entertainment industry. I started acting when I was a child. I did my first commercial when I was two, and then kept acting from there. And then when I was a teenager, I was scouted by Sony Records in Japan, and I did the J-pop thing for a few years. Very embarrassing. I'll never show anyone pictures from that time. And then I went to UCLA, studied musical theater, and then I started making videos on YouTube. And I've been in all different fields of entertainment lately, producing, writing, acting, singing. I'm doing a live show now. It's a musical parody of Troop Beverly Hills. And I have a show later tonight. That's why I'm bowing out early. But that's what I'm doing.
So I'm actually looking on IMDb right now, and it's showing you're in pre-production for a series called Dark Web.
Actually, we just wrapped shooting that on Monday, so IMDb is wrong. Shocker. Yeah, we shot that for, I know, the internet's always right. We shot for 3 weeks, and yeah, it's really, really cool. It's a sci-fi series. It's going to be really fun and creepy. I'm excited to see it come out.
Awesome. Where is it going to be shown? What channel or?
That's a great question. I don't know, because I don't know that they've figured out distribution yet. But
it's whoever picks it up.
It'll wind up being like Stranger Things. Everybody was talking about that, and I'm like, I've got to see this. Where can I see it? And they're like, oh, it's on Netflix. I'm like, I was going to cancel Netflix, and now I can't.
Yeah, exactly. That would be the best case scenario, something like that happened. But I love Stranger Things.
I can't wait for season 2. I just finished it last night. Oh wow, it's just
last night.
Yeah, Well, I work third shift, and whenever I get home, it's like I have my schedule. I know you guys have really tight schedules. My schedule is like between my day job, technically, is a third shift job, and then this, and I do photography, and it's like, and last night at 2 o'clock in the morning, I was painting, painting walls. It's like, it's crazy. Tell us a little bit how you got on with Machinima and working on the Transformers brand.
I actually just auditioned for it. I did voiceover a lot more as a child, less so as an adult, but I saw that they were going to be rebooting Transformers, and I thought, what? So I auditioned for it, and then I didn't hear anything for a little while, and then I auditioned for it again, and then found out I got it and recorded all pretty quickly. It was a pretty quick process for me. But it was awesome. And the first episode that I recorded had already been animated, so I got to like watch along. And it was an interesting experience for me because, you know, they're going, okay, say that again, but stretch it out 0.01 seconds longer, which is very new for me. I was like, oh,
right down to the milliseconds.
Yeah, I thought they were joking, and I laughed, and no one else was laughing, and I was like, got it, 0.01.
Okay. It's like, how exactly long is 0.01 seconds?
Yeah.
I know John. I've known John for years, and he's been a Transformer fan for probably since the beginning, like us. Yeah. How much did you know about the Transformers brand before you came to Combiner Wars?
Honestly, not a ton. I had watched some of it as a child, but I was more into Gem and the Holograms. I wasn't that familiar with it as an adult, but now I've been watching the series and I've been like, I get it. Well, I'm hooked. I want to know what happens next.
Well, you might be aware that Miss Samantha Newark has actually been a guest on this show before. And she was a voice in Transformers back in the 80s.
Yep.
I did not know that. That's amazing.
Yep. Yes. Samantha Newark, for those of you who don't know, she was the speaking voice of Gem from Gem and the Holograms. And she was also Ariel in the original Transformers series. She voiced that character and I believe one other that is escaping me at the moment. But yes, we had her on the show about 2 years ago.
And she's also a Nashville native, or well, she is now.
Yes.
So yeah. She's not too far from me.
A very, very sweet woman. I actually saw her at Lexington Comic Con this past year and reunited with her, and she actually recognized me and remembered me, so that was really nice.
How cool. Was her hair pink?
Yes, actually it was. It, very much. Yes. Very much so.
Okay.
Trademark.
Yes. although I think lately, she's also a friend of mine on Facebook, so lately she's gone to a blonde now. So, but okay. She does go back to pink once in a while. And
good. As it should be.
Yes. what's your favorite thing about working on Mistress of Flame? Tell us a little bit about the character and what inspires you for the character.
Mistress of Flame is one of the three leaders on Kamenas, and she she's very regal. She's got her staff, and you know, every time she turns around, it's very dramatic and epic, I would say. She, however, is more of a peacetime leader. So when things start to get real, she sort of panics and starts making rash decisions, which I think is all I can say without giving other things away. So yeah, that's just a flame.
You got to be careful there. We're only five episodes.
I know.
In, so.
Well, I mean, you know.
The world of voice acting and / acting.
Yes. No, I mean, things have started to get real. Did you see the last episode?
Yes. I binge watched it for a couple hours ago before I came in here to set up, and that last, it just keeps getting better. The first episode, I'm like, too short, want more. The next episode, I'm like, too short, want even more. And now it's you know, I'm like, this is great. You know, the last episode blew me away. Especially the ending. Since it's actually an aired episode, should we talk about spoilers for the aired episodes?
You can let people know that they're about to get spoiled, perhaps.
Yeah. Okay.
That'd probably be good. Yeah.
If you or anyone you know is about to be spoiled, please.
Following podcast is rated S for spoilers.
Yes.
Right. We're up to the number five, right?
Yep.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And also, for those of you who don't know, Mr. Bailey is also the voice of Honest Movie Trailers.
And game trailers and a bunch of other things.
Yes. but
we'll get
to
me in time, man.
The final episode that just aired, what's today, Friday, so Tuesday, it went up, ended with Devastator ripping Hot Rod's arm off.
Yep.
Pretty.
That
pretty.
Happened.
Yeah, but there was something else in that episode about maybe episode 4 and 5, about maybe two people you wouldn't think working together, kind of working together type spoiler, big spoiler, you know.
Yeah. No, I know. A lot of exciting things are happening in such a compact amount of time. And I'm glad that you thought they were too short, because that's much better than thinking they're too long.
Yeah, well, I mean, by saying too short, it's more of a critique in the fact that that I'm enjoying it. Like you say, you know, I'm enjoying it and I want more, you know. Yeah. The animation, the voice acting, I think is spot on. I'm enjoying it tremendously. If only they could just draw it out more and more, you know. It's like you got a good battle scene, you got some good dialogue, and then it's over.
It's as they say, leave them wanting more.
Yes, and it is. So the Mistress of Flame, what kind of direction were you given about this character, since it's a relatively new character to the Transformers lore?
Mm-hmm.
There's really no background before that.
Yeah, really just that she's, I think the voices they were sort of referencing when I auditioned were like, what did they say, Angelina Jolie and I can't even remember now, but I remember reading that and going, well, that's not me, so I'm just gonna do, you know, my take on it, which is, I guess, just somebody who's really regal and powerful and strong, and you know, if you saw me in real life, I'm barely 5'2". You'd be like, oh, look at that cute small person. And you know, in this, I got to be larger than life and carry a staff. I really keep talking about that staff because I'm obsessed with it.
I was just saying, you like the staff,
but yeah,
so, So, listeners, if you ever get to a convention and she is a guest and everything, you know what to bring her. Bring her a staff.
A staff, yes.
Yeah,
and ye shall have my heart.
So
just don't bring her a staff infection.
No.
I hate to tell you this, but she thinks you're kidding, but you're going to get a lot of this. You do know that. You're going to get a lot of this just from what you said.
A lot of staffs?
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Oh, yeah.
Bring them on.
I don't care if it's a broomstick or whatever. They're going to say, this is a staff. Here you go.
Yeah.
Hey, the more
than you're going to get. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, I've got to get a Combiner Wars Prime, so so I can go get an autographed here.
Well, there you go.
I
will say one thing. I've been watching the episodes, and I will say that the voice does come out as very regal, very
absolutely
sure. So you do portray that very well.
Oh well, thank you. It was a really fun process, and especially, you know, we recorded a few episodes together, John and I, with Jason and Frank as well, and getting to hear those voices like 2 feet away from me, these epic characters, was just so unreal, I would say is the word. I left there going, what just happened? What is my life? So that helps.
Brett, you had some questions for Lon.
Well, I did. Let me see if I can get my head scratching here and figure this out real quick. You did. You were involved in a movie called Four Rooms.
It was.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and that was way back. What was that? 95.
Yes, you're outing my age here, but I was a wee young lass.
That wasn't your first one either, but I was going to start with that because I wanted to ask you some questions about it.
Yeah, I was.
What did you do in that movie?
It was a movie about a bellhop who went to 4 different rooms on New Year's Eve at a hotel that was based on the Chateau Marmont in Los Angeles, and Tim Roth played that character. And so each room was directed by a different director, and mine was Robert Rodriguez, who is amazing and I love and I'm still in contact with. And he's like still my biggest supporter, which is crazy and cool.
Is that the show that had Madonna in it?
Yes, yes. Madonna was in the first segment.
Had someone else in it too that I was gonna ask you about.
Oh, there are a lot of people in it. Who are you going to ask me about?
Bruce Willis.
Yes. Bruce Willis was in it. I think he's, like, uncredited because he did it as a favor or something.
He did. He was uncredited, but they did list him.
Oh,
I was
going to
ask you, did you do scenes with him? Did you?
No, I didn't.
Did you meet him at all?
I didn't meet him at all. They shot all the segments separately. So mine was Antonio Banderas played my father.
So you got to meet him.
I did. I worked with him.
That was my next question.
Salma Hayek, too.
Yes. Salma Hayek was in a video that was playing on the TV in the background because at the time, she wasn't famous yet. So if you watch it, you're like, oh, there's Salma Hayek in a bikini dancing on the TV. And basically, the kid who played my brother and I are watching it like, this is really inappropriate for little children to be watching. So that was Salma Hayek's role in the movie. But so many amazing people are in it. Jennifer Beals is in it too. Tamlin Tomito was in it, played my mom. That was an epic experience.
The other person I wanted to talk about was actually Tim Roth. What did you think of him?
Oh, I thought he was incredible. I was completely unfamiliar with him when we shot that. I remember that he chain smoked. and I remember that he was an incredible actor. Those are like my two memories.
Yeah, he's got a
mom.
Yeah, he's got an impressive resume. I was kind of curious about that because I'd actually heard that before that he was smoked a lot.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know if he still does. This was 20 years ago, over 20 years ago. But I do remember being like, Mom, I feel like that's a lot of cigarettes for one human, and she was like, yeah, don't do it.
Don't do that.
Don't do
Eric,
that.
Eric Calderon, is he the voice director?
Yes.
Okay, he just posted on our YouTube channel. He said, I told Lana that I wanted a cross between Angelina Jolie and Maleficent.
Yes.
And Judy Dench in Shakespeare in Love.
Yes.
Without a little less Yes.
That's it.
Without a and little less bite back nastiness.
Yes. And Judi Dench and I pretty much have the same voice. So that was like totally easy for me. Just kidding.
So.
Yes, that was it.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, Brett.
No, I did have one more, though. There was another movie that you did, Magic Pearl.
Mm-hmm.
And George Takei was in that.
Oh, my.
Yes. He was. It's actually the second time that I worked with him.
Really? I would love to know what your thoughts are of him.
He was an amazing person. I was a child both times again. So the first Magic Pearl was an animated film.
Right.
I don't even remember how old I was. Maybe like 11. I don't know.
I'm not gonna tell.
I don't even remember.
She's so old she can't remember how old she was.
She's just an old lady.
Many back cigarettes ago. I don't know why I keep talking about smoking. So I didn't really interact with him during that because I think we recorded everything separately. But I did a Canadian TV movie with him called The Best Bad Thing. And I was 12 when I did that. And he was really warm and really kind and had that gorgeous voice. People are starting to arrive, guys. Sorry. because it was so long ago, I'm going to think of specific memories. I remember him teaching me Mr. Sandman, the bum, 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 bum. And he was like singing it in his deep, deep voice. I was like, whoa, who is this guy? That's really my only memory of him other than him being, you know, incredible and such a striking personality.
Were they shooting at you over there or what? Wow.
Sounds like maybe something slamming down or something. Yeah.
The only other question I had was going back to the four rooms, and I believe one of those you said that they were written by different directors and everything. Wasn't one of those written by Quentin Tarantino?
Yes. The fourth room was written and directed by Quentin Tarantino.
Okay, and that and wasn't the one you were in, though. He was.
It's not the one I was in, but he was on set with us a lot.
He's pretty controversial. Without getting too involved, what were your thoughts on him on the set? I'm just curious.
I'm going to move into a quiet room, so bear with me. Okay. My memories of Quentin Tarantino are that my mom and I were at the craft service table, and he walked up, and Pulp Fiction had just come out, and he said, "Hey, have you seen my movie?" And my mom was like, "She's 10." He was like, "Yeah."
My movie.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
You didn't hear what I said. Did you see it? I mean, you didn't faze him.
What's that?
I said you probably didn't faze him with it. Your mother didn't faze him with saying that you were 10.
So, no, yeah. Not at all. He was. Yeah. I remember him being very energetic. We'll say.
Energetic's a word. Yes, that's a good word.
Yes. And my mom, and you know, and she said no, she hasn't seen it. You know, and he said, cool. And then he grabbed like M&Ms and walked away. That was my
memory. Sugar. I need my sugar.
Yes, he was sugared up. But you know, I, looking back later, I'm like, man, that's such a cool experience that I got to have. And I absolutely didn't appreciate it at the time because I didn't have any idea who he was. And I was just like, this guy loves M&Ms. So now I know more. But.
Or any other sugar product that was close by, but that's okay.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's very evident in his films, too.
Yes.
Yeah, he's in his genius, mouth, man. Not in his hands.
Oh, there you That's go. True.
That is true.
Chad, are you still there with us?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. I mute out so I don't have any background noise.
Okay. You have some questions for Lana.
Actually, Brett asked them all.
Brett, shame on you.
I did get the Madonna question in there, so...
Yeah. I actually had that written down. I had that written down.
The Madonna version. Madonna,
because I. Well, I'll just leave it at that. Yeah, Madonna. Yeah.
I wanted to meet her, but I didn't meet her. She was in a different segment, and I think I saw her. We shot the poster art, like the whole cast together, but I don't think that I even saw her face to face on that day. And she was kept pretty secluded. So I wish I'd
known. I actually remember your character in that movie now that we've been talking more about it. And it's been a long time since I've seen that movie. So yeah,
same for me.
Yeah.
One other thing I was going to ask you. So you said that, you know, you grew up and you knew that you, because of your location, that you had to go into this business. But going from where you started, did you really think that you would meet all the people that you saw to get to where you're at now, to where you're now doing, you're doing your voice acting and acting? I mean, did you anticipate that? I mean, because you hear all these people that go out there wanting to have that and never getting it.
Right.
And you're obtaining.
No, of course. Well, thank you. I definitely have been very lucky. I don't think as a kid, no, of course I couldn't have thought any of these things would happen. But also as a kid, you sort of don't realize how hard things are and this business. And I, you know, when I was younger, my main concern was like, what? I have an audition tomorrow and I have to miss this sleepover. I'm not talking to you, Mom. You know, it was literally my only focus. And I was irritated that I had all these opportunities. And now as an adult, I want to smack that kid and say, appreciate it. Because when you're an adult, it's a lot harder. And, you know, it's a lucky day when you get to drive back and forth and back and forth across town in one day because you're so busy with work. You know, and one thing I didn't mention was last year, because of YouTube, I got to collaborate with Stan Lee, and he made a cameo in a video that I produced, and that was that was really amazing. He was so cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, on in terms of modern day, because, you know, a lot of these experiences were when I was a kid, but now with him and Guillermo del Toro, I also worked with last year because of YouTube. It's like these are people who are icons and who have created so many amazing things, and that I can appreciate much more now that I am so familiar with their body of work and all that. So, yeah, I'm very lucky, and I'm not taking a second of it for granted now.
So getting back to the Transformers and Combiner Wars, what does it mean to you working on the Transformers franchise, on the Transformers brand, knowing how big it is? I mean, were you really aware of how big the Transformers brand was before you got on, or?
Oh, of course. I mean, you know, even though I wasn't, you know, a super fan of the show before, I of course have, you know, been familiar with the Transformers brand my entire life. It's been everywhere, and every, you know, every guy that I grew up with was obsessed with it, of course. So, and a lot of women now. I think, you know, when I was a kid, it wasn't really like, it was primarily targeted toward men, and boys, and now it's like everyone can enjoy it, which I think is
my girlfriend. She was not really aware of how big the franchise was. I mean, you know, she'd seen it, you know, as a kid and everything, but never really thought about it until we got together. And now her SUV has a giant Autobot insignia on the back of it.
Yeah.
So it rubs off, you know. So, yeah, I mean, what does it mean to you as working on Transformers Combiner Wars, and what's it like? I mean,
I think it means being part of a legacy and being part of something that's been around for so long and has meant so much to so many people. You know, when I posted on social media, just obviously publicly everyone was like, yes, but privately just to my close group of friends, I think they're more excited about this than anything I've ever done in my entire life. And by far, everybody's just like, what? You're a Transformer? That's the most amazing thing I've ever heard. I'm like, yeah, but like, I know, I've done this stuff too. They're like, we don't care.
We don't care.
Yeah, they really don't. People are posting, oh, is your friend a Transformer? Didn't think so. I'm like, guys. in that sense, that's just the fun, cool part. But also just, it's being part of this huge family that has generations of people involved and, getting to do something that so many people love. Obviously is the whole series as a whole is really exciting and lucky, fortunate.
Now if there was one Transformer character that you would absolutely say I identify with that character outside of Mistress of Flame, who you are now, if there's any one Transformer character that you're aware of and have gotten to know some, which one would you have to say would be your favorite?
Do you mean in Combiner Wars or in general?
In Combiner Wars or in general.
I mean, I had not heard of Windblade before Combiner Wars, but she's cool. I don't know if we're similar, but I'm like, yeah, I don't know.
I think this cartoon is the very first time she's ever actually appeared in animation.
Oh, okay.
It appeared in the comics, but not until this particular show now.
Okay.
So that's...
I would have said Bumblebee, but I feel like... just watching this show, I'm like, yeah, Windblade. I want to be like her in my real life. She's adventurous and doesn't take anybody's nonsense. I'm sticking with that.
But she took pot shots at Starscream and,
I know, but from her perspective.
She means well.
She means well, yeah. She's got good intentions.
She hasn't gone through anger management class, so she's just having some issues.
So yeah. This Transformers series, obviously, we've already been introduced to at least three separate female characters in Transformers. Mm-hmm. In Generation 1, there was RC and, of course, Alita 1, and then there were several other smaller role characters in Transformers. But and then in Beast Wars, we had Black Arachnia. Were you aware, did you look into any of their roles in Transformers for any inspiration or reference?
Any of the other female roles?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
Honestly, I did not.
Because, this show here, the females are taking more of a center stage role. I mean, we were introduced to them in the very first episode, whereas in Generation 1, it took several, I think it was Season 2 where we finally see them for the first time. And introduced to the concept of female Transformers. A lot of people have some trouble wrapping their brain, how can a robot be female? But I think it's more the characteristics. What does that mean to you, bringing out the character of a female robot?
I mean, it means a lot. It's, I think, growing up and I still call myself young, but when I was a child, there weren't a lot of strong female characters in any genre, but particularly, in animation. I mean, the reason I loved Gem and the Hologram so much was that was kind of like really all I can remember seeing that I thought, oh, that's so cool. That's like a woman who's, a group of women who are so strong and in charge, and there just wasn't a lot of that. So I think, in this modern age, I think people are starting to give more importance to, gender equality and the fact that they've taken an active effort to bring more female characters to this show in particular. I think that's says a lot, and I think, you know, the world's changing, and I'm happy to be even a small part of that, to take on something that maybe young girls watching now can say, oh, I didn't know, you know, girls could be Transformers, and now I know they can. Or, you know, hopefully to grow up in a world where that's not even surprising. It's just like, well, of course there are male Transformers, so of course there are female Transformers.
Well, I remember being a kid back in the 80s. I mean, the very first time they were introduced, we see Alita One and Firestar and several of the others. And at first it kind of struck me as odd. Then I got to thinking, I'm like, well, of course there's female Transformers. And to have them now more in the forefront of especially like this series, it just seems more natural to me. And it almost makes the other series that where they weren't as featured seem like they're missing something. I mean, I don't know if I'm the only one that feels that way or not, but.
Yes. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I probably am. Yeah.
I agree with you, Tom. I think them bringing out more diverse characters has allowed for them to grow, so to speak, you know, and bring the more, which combined with bringing out the more adult side of the cartoon.
And you are breaking up badly.
But thank you for being on, sorry. Robot Man. This is a show about robots, why not?
Yes. And as a correction, yes, Windblade did appear in Robots in Disguise last year, so I totally forgot about that. I'm sorry.
Windblade would be very upset with you.
Yes, yes. Well, I think when I think of Robots in Disguise, I think of Strong Arm, because she's one of the main characters in that that show. And I actually saw most of season one, and I have not been able to see season two at all. So that's my fault. But
Now that you finished Stranger Things, you've got your next assignment.
Yes, yes, yes. Anything else that you're working on that you want to tell fans about and to look for you in?
If you're in Los Angeles, I am currently doing a musical parody of Troop Beverly Hills. That's what I'm gearing up to do in a few minutes. And in a few weeks, we open a musical parody of Hocus Pocus. Mm-hmm. That's live, in terms of live stuff, that's what I'm doing. I also am part of a series called Nina Unlocked that will be debuting next month, I believe, on Recursor TV. And I play an AI named Nina, and I get to do some cool interviews with some amazing people in the science and technology world. So look out for that. I'm very excited about that.
Awesome. So one last question. You working with John and Jason, what's it like working with these two jokers here?
Oh, it was terrible. it was so much fun. I think, you know, we were packed in this room together, and again, just hearing their voices that I know and you know, I'm so impressed by, and getting to see the final product too, and seeing I was there when he said those words, and I remember how I felt when he said them. I think that's such an amazing feeling, and there's nothing else like that.
Now, are you all recording it like the old style, like everybody in the room and recording them that way, or?
Both. I did one episode by myself, but then the rest, yeah, with everybody, which I think is more fun and, you know. I think
allows you to play off of each other and the emotion.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But they're all so incredibly talented. I'm such a fan of all of them, and as people and as actors. John's crying because he's very emotional. That's another thing I learned.
It's called acting. Fooled you, didn't I? Huh?
No, he's just a wimp.
Did I just
Did I just detect the Ravage that was at several cons?
No, sorry.
On our show?
He has a Russian accent, bro.
Oh, well, you know.
Nice try, though. Good pull.
And I also have to say that because of one of the things that you've appeared in back in 2015, I now have a new nickname for Brett. It's Hobocop. So there you go. He just like.
Yep.
Well, I do know that you have to hop off here very shortly and everything. So if you want to stick on for a few more minutes until you have to go, that's fine. But yeah. We'll talk to John now. And
awesome. Well, real quick, I did want to say something to Lana. Just remember when you said that you'll remember when John said this and I was there for that. Just remember there's going to come a point where John's going to say, I was there when Lana said this. So just remember that. Wow.
That's true.
Absolutely.
That would be very nice. But, well, thank you.
I want to remind our listeners that if you are listening to us live or if you're watching the YouTube video or listening to us even on the downloadable version later on, you can interact with us on Twitter at TFYLP or on our Facebook group. Transformers for your listening pleasure. I got a thread going for this episode, and each episode, as they go new, we pin it to the top of the thread, so you can go right immediately to it. So if you have any questions or comments about the show or our guests, feel free to let us know, and if we're still live, we'll ask them while we're on air. So John, welcome back to TFYLP.
Hey.
You were on at the very final SlagaCon, actually. We had you on.
Yeah, I was on live.
Yes. You were sitting next to me and in St. Galvatron, and we had all kinds of fun. So,
fun that there was to be had at SlagaCon. Because... No.
Yeah, it was an awful show.
Yeah, it's awful.
Well, it probably was boycotted because of what it means in tradition. There's so many English Transformers fans.
Your table was actually right next to ours. So
there were only two tables in the room there, Darren.
Yeah.
Then there was Brett's whole area over on the other side of the room, you know.
He didn't make any sales at all, so he just...
The more the merrier.
So, John, for the listeners who haven't seen you before, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in the business, and then we'll move on to your history in Transformers.
Okay.
Before time began.
No. I got interested.
There was the cube.
I got interested in voices when I was 4. Sesame Street was my first. We didn't have a television in our house, but my grandmother did. They were those rich white privileged people, you know what I mean? So they had this wood grain 3,000-pound television that had 3 channels on it. But you know, I was introduced to PBS, and I started paying attention to the character voices because, you know, Sesame Street's fun, you know. And my mom is actually the one who first made me try to attempt doing a voice. And she's like, I can sound just like Grover. And I'm being the sore loser that I am. I'm like, I bet I can do it better than she can. So, and then it went from that to doing impressions of Mr. Rogers. And then when I was 5, back then TV didn't really melt your brain like it does now, where you turn on TV now, it's like kids like moths to, you know, one of those bug zappers. But back then I was playing alone with my mousetrap game, which is not how you're supposed to play, but I had no friends. And I heard Peter Cullen's voice on the Voltron intro. Because at first it didn't really pay attention, but when he came to the Voltron, Defender of the Universe, I was like, oh, that made me sit up and pay attention. And then when I heard the same voice on Transformers, I was immediately hooked. And I didn't know there was a cartoon, actually. I saw the toys first. My mother took me down the toy aisle. It was either Service Merchandise or Target. I can't remember which. But back then, there was only one aisle of toys. It was girls on one side, boys on the other. And she took me down to where the divide is between the G.I. Joe little section and the Transformers section. And she said, pick one. Whatever one you pick, that's what you're going to stick with for the rest of your life. And I'm like, well, geez, no pressure, you know. And I saw Transformers.
You realize, You do realize you could have been the voice of Flint.
Eh.
I mean, you just made a decision there.
You'd rather be a human with a lot of tiny losable accessories or freaking Optimus Prime.
I mean, I'm just saying, you made the voice long ago, but go ahead.
But I looked at Transformers as three toys in one, not just two, but three, because it was a vehicle, it was a robot, and it was a puzzle. I never bothered with instructions. I would either make it or break it, man. So it was like I get to play three times as much with this toy. So it just logically made sense to pick. And the packaging was gorgeous. The Transformers were they were very appealing. You know, they just had something that popped about them. They were very well marketed. And then when I spotted I instantly recognized the show when I heard Optimus Prime's voice, and then realized, oh, this is a show based on the toys that I play with, and I was hooked from that point on. My brother got me interested in figuring out who was who. We were actually on a quest to figure out who the voice of Optimus Prime was, because back then they just slapped up the entire cast. They didn't put which characters they did, and for a while we thought Jack Angel did it, because he did a very similar character in the first Dark Forces PC game. And my brother started working for a subsidiary of Google called ODP, and was putting together compiling lists of the characters that voice actors had done, so that people would be able to search and say, oh, okay, so that Lorenzo Music was the voice of Garfield, so and so. And so that was kind of the beginning of people having public knowledge of who voice actors were and what they did and what they looked like. It was sometimes very hard to find pictures of these people. So I actually got interested in that, and then he found out who Pat Fraley was, and then he was a voiceover coach as well as actor, and he sent he bought some cassette tapes. These are these little things that, you know, have ribbons inside and audio comes out. It's crazy. Star-Lord used one, kids. Now you know what it is, because something current used it. So we listened to the crap out of those tapes, and it was about creating character voices. And I worked in puppets, doing children's ministries and church, and coming up with character voices off the top of my head, and doing sketches and stuff. I was always the guy they came to if they needed to do some kind of stage thing, like it was a sketch or a skit or a play or whatever. I was like, we need to have something to do with orange juice. Go. So I was that guy. I had my own improv group in college, public speaking type stuff and speech, and had a lot of fun coming up with cool things. And eventually, just doing impressions, and my brother introduced me to to Paolo Francisco's like movie trailer parody, is the Little Tortilla Boy sketch. And he's like, I think you could probably do that better than he does it. And when we saw Don LaFontaine, the original Interworld guy who created the catchphrase in the Geico commercial, we started paying attention to like the movie trailer guys. And I kind of just started practicing it from there. And I'd been doing impressions for years. So when my wife and I started dating, I was doing impressions to impress her family, no pun intended. They were very big into politics. So I did a lot of W and Clinton or whatever, you know, floated their boat just to make everybody like me. And then when we got married, my wife was home bored and I was at work, and MySpace was a thing that had just started. And she's like, I made you this cool page. It's got all these cool little animated pictures and stuff. So it's just totally you. And it was right when Papa Bad's they first started coming out, and a Papa Bad for voiceover popped up, and they were a chain. So they were across the entire United States. I think they had like maybe 10, 20 locations, but one of them happened to be like 10, 12 minutes away from my house. And she's like, it says that they represent like 500 talents and that they're looking for more talents. I'm like, it's probably a scam to get your ID or whatever. And she's like, well, the worst they can do is say no. I mean, what do you get to lose? And she was told the best advice I've ever gotten. I went and tried out. They freaking loved me right off the bat. They signed me a few months later. They sent me my first audition a month after that. And within 11 days of getting my first audition, I'd already booked my first whole bunch of commercials at once. And then I was doing that part-time while I worked a forklift job, third shift warehouse, horrible, horrible hours, like 14-hour days. And but I would book maybe 1 to 3. I think 1 month I booked 5, and I thought that was terrible. I was like, don't you have to book every single day in order to be able to be a voice actor? I didn't know how it worked. I just go and read the things, and sometimes they give me checks and sometimes they don't. So the warehouse job, after the economy collapsed, the warehouse job went bankrupt. And when it came out of bankruptcy, our location closed down in order for them to stay afloat. So I got laid off, a little bit of severance money and 401k money and some unemployment, and just decided to do the auditions full time, and booked okay, but not enough to support a family. And then my first manager found me online he found me on YouTube. I started YouTube back in 2007, which is how I came to have kind of a Transformers following. I was doing dubs and funny things with Transformers and G.I. Joe PSAs type stuff, and came up with this funny idea with Ultra Magnus being the host of a Transformers Unsolved Mystery because of being the voice of Robert Stack. They both have the same initials, Ultra Magnus, Unsolved Mysteries, you know, and mm-hmm. pointed out flaws in the animation. There's funny little silly stuff. But it slowly grew a following. Then I started doing fake toy reviews. Somebody gave me the idea to do toy reviews in character. Well, they wanted me. I had a lot of friends that did toy reviews, and no, it's dumb. Anybody can go to Walmart, buy a toy, and play with it on camera. It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And they're like, well, you did the voice of a toy. Wouldn't it be like cool if you? And I was like, and I started understanding what they were trying to say was that I did the voice while I played with the toy or whatever. But I thought it would be funnier to actually become the, you know, portray the character, put the gloves on, whatever. And I had done the voice of some Captain Rex, Anakin Skywalker stuff. And so the original idea was to put on some black gloves to pretend to be a stormtrooper and actually be Captain Rex reviewing Captain Rex. And that turned into Optimus Prime reviewing himself and other toys, and kind of gave him a different personality where he loves himself, but he hates Bumblebee because he thinks Bumblebee's got too many toys of himself. He's a glory hog. absolutely despises anything that has to do with Megatron. And even if it's the best toy ever, the joke was that he would pull out like a really bad Optimus Prime toy and say that this is a good toy. And I was surprised at how silly and stupid and how quick I could make these simple little videos. And they were getting really good views for an average channel. I was getting almost 100,000 views a video. And so that was on the side. And some of the videos I first started doing were just voiceover videos, me doing fake movie trailers, whatever. And my first manager heard me doing trailers and was like, I think you have a lot of raw talent. And tried me out on a few. I booked like 3 out of 4, which is more than anybody they'd ever tried before. Then he started booking me on trailers like all the time. Got me in the Screen Actors Guild, tripled my income within a year, qualified for a Screen Actors Guild insurance by the end of that year after that he signed me. And then he put me over with the best manager in the business, who represents Dave Fennoy. You'd know him as, I believe he was Warpath in Transformers War for Cybertron or Fall of Cybertron.
Wow.
And it's Dave Fennoy and Tom Kane, the voice of Yoda, Professor Utonium. She only represents like 30 people, I guess, and some very, very big names. So I was like, wow, I'm in the big leagues. And I was signed by CESD, which is like one of the biggest and best in the business. They have Frank Welker is with CESD. Mm. Greg Berger, David Sobloff, all these Transformers voice actors. So when I go to there, I look around and there's Alex Polinski, who played Head Masterson in Transformers Animated, and my buddy Adam MacArthur, who's like the co-star of Adam Star vs. Force of Evil. And I was like, holy crap, it's like mini Comic-Con. I don't have to wait in line or anything. Brian Delaney from Fallout 4 is in there, you know. And I'm really shocked at how many people know who I am without me having to say, you know, I'm so-and-so, or wearing like an advertising who I am on my shirt or hat or whatever. And just started booking video game characters. I booked some major title. I got Uncle Bean Dishonored 2 coming out November 11th. A big title I can't talk about yet that comes out in February of next year. All the XCOM games. A lot of other smaller games. There's one for Microsoft and Wii U and Xbox, or PC, Wii U and Xbox. This month, actually, called Snarf Quest Tales. I'll be playing the main character. And you might recognize the voice that I used for the main character a little bit. He's kind of based on Wheeljack. So that'll be a chapter-based game. You'll be able to play as me. And a bunch of other cool stuff. Literally every little kind of nook and cranny that somebody throws me. And I never really know what I can do until they're like, hey, can you do this? I'm like, sure, I'll try. sure. I'm also like an unofficial voice match for a lot of huge celebrities. I fill in for Chris Hemsworth all the time. Recently been filling in for Vin Diesel, believe it or not. Wow. And Vin Diesel, Kurt Russell, Russell Crowe, Willem Dafoe a lot lately. I attempted Matt Damon yesterday, but his voice is so much like my own normal voice. I'm like, those normal guys, man, they're hard to do. filled in for Chris Pratt for 2 different films coming that will be coming up soon. One of them can be coming out this month. And wow, that became like a big chunk of my business was just doing 80. And it's like the easiest job. For me, it's the easiest job in the world. It takes me like 5-10 minutes and only one or two sentences. It pays double scale. And I'm like, yeah, I could pay the bills doing this. So, that's from then to now. And somewhere in the middle, you know, the guys found me on doing movie trailers, saw me, the guys that do Honest Trailer saw that I did real movie trailers, so found me on YouTube. And like, hey, we do this funny little YouTube thing. I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? It's YouTube, who's going to see
which
me?
Are absolutely gold.
Yeah, we just got nominated for an Emmy, so, you know, fingers crossed.
I saw that. That's so amazing. Congratulations.
Who knew, right?
So, Transformers Combiner Wars, you have landed the role of Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
What does that mean to you as a fan?
Well, I had a bucket list, and don't get me wrong, because a lot of people assume that I'm a hardcore Transformers fan when I'm really just more of a casual fan that has just always loved the franchise from the very beginning. But I don't know what's on page 32 of issue number 16 of comic book series number 3. You know, I'm not a hardcore fan. Like, I don't know anything much about Victory or the anime versions. But I know it in general, and I know a lot more about, you know, the American versions. And I've been a fan for 32 years. I've been a fan of Transformers, and it was on my bucket list when I first started. I started professionally in voiceover 7 years ago. But even before then, I'm like, I would love to book a recurring main character in a network animated series, and preferably Transformers. And so not only did I book a recurring character in a Transformers series, but it's a main character. It's the character that I've loved and been practicing for 32 years. So, that's friggin' huge, man. It's friggin' Optimus Prime. Who wouldn't want to be Optimus Prime?
It is. I mean, it's like a childhood dream come true. I mean,
it literally is a childhood dream come true.
So, working on Combiner Wars, tell us, what it's like, working on as Optimus Prime, and things that you didn't realize, maybe.
Well, I'll tell you, when I got done with the session, I was shaking, like literally my whole body was vibrating. I could not stop talking. I was talking 1,000 miles an hour. I went and hung out with Philip DeFranco from the Phil DeFranco Show, Sexy Phil, and my buddy Kevin Bruick. We were all hanging out, and they're like, dude, are you good? Are you okay? I was like, dude, I kept it together for that whole session, because I'm like, I'm going to be a professional. But as soon as I was gone, all that energy finally came spilling out. I tried to keep it cool. I didn't want to be like Sam Jackson when he sat next to the Yoda puppet and just not quit smiling the entire time. So I tried really hard not to get sucked into how cool the stuff on the screen looked, even if it's just early animatic stuff. And I was just like, I've only been able to record like so much of what I do, even if it's with other actors, is separate. And this was the second time that I've gotten to record with other actors in the booth together, working on something animated, which is just, it's still the most amazing experience. But yeah, that was, and those are big shoes to fill. And I made sure up front, I'm like, if Peter Cullen wants to have if he's even remotely interested, I respectfully decline. And they're like, no, we're going in a whole new direction, all new cast. And we're not hiring any of the original actors. It's not going to be like, you know, one new actor, old actor, you know. And I'm like, all right, as long as I'm not, you know, stealing something from another actor, because that's like a big no-no in my book.
Well, I mean, I guess it's unwritten code in the voice acting realm. It's like if you know somebody's after a role, you don't swoop them on it. You know?
I've had auditions come by for Wolverine, and I would call Steve or text Steve and like, dude, what's, and he's like, you know, every time the audition comes up, I have to re-audition for Wolverine, even though I've done it 1,000 times. I'm like, wow, that's the biggest people in the industry still have to audition for their job. I got an audition for Marcus Fenix. I'm like, I'm not doing this. This is John DiMaggio's character. So I messaged him like, hey, bro, they're trying to give your role to somebody else because they probably think they can find a sound like that's cheaper or whatever. So yeah, I try to treat other people the way I would prefer to be treated. So if somebody got a hold of my role, they would call me or text me or message me and say, hey, they're trying to get you, you know. And I do hear that a lot. I'm like, hey, they got this audition, say if you can sound like John Bailey, the epic movie trailer voice. I'm like, well, they could have just asked me, but whatever. So, but yeah, it's one of these things where you watch each other's backs. I think voice actors do that a little bit more than on-camera actors do, but that's just a personal opinion. I don't know a whole bunch of on-camera
Speaking
actors.
Speaking of having your back, I have to leave. I'm so sorry.
Okay. Stuck around as long as you could.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's getting louder, and I don't want to interrupt you guys.
Lana, I want to thank you so much for joining us and everything, and thank you so much for your time.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. You're welcome back anytime.
Welcome back. All right. I'll see you tomorrow.
Jason? Right. Jason, did you pop up in there, bro? All right. Oh, still breaking up.
Well, bye, guys. It's good to see you all.
Bye. It's good to see you again.
Thank you, Lana.
The only thing that was missing was the sound of your staff banging on the floor every few minutes.
Yes.
You got it.
There you go.
Okay. Done.
So,
well, I did have one question. John, you had mentioned that that you guys kind of watch each other's back.
You're breaking up, bro.
That's John.
There you go.
There you go. It's all right, John. You said that that you guys as voice actors watch each other's backs. Did Peter Cullen give you any advice? Is he giving you any advice? I know you've met him before.
I'll just basically tell you what happened. I made a point not to ever do a person's character back to them unless they specifically request me to do it, because doing an impression of somebody's character that they came up with the original voice for back to that person is kind of, well, to a lot of voice actors it is. Some of them are cool with it, some of them are indifferent, but there's the majority of them, it's kind of like a slap in the face saying, oh, you think you can do my character better than me? And you know, some fans are just really excited and you're their favorite voice or whatever, but you know, and it never bothers me. And I've had guys that I've met, the voice of Carl from Aqua Teen Hunger Force, and apparently he's like, he loves it when people try to do impressions of his characters because he likes to put them in their place and show them how badly they do it. So when I did it for him, it was like, well, that was really good. So what you're saying is if anything happened to me, you could replace me or whatever. And I'm like, I'm not going to say that I know a guy that could make you disappear. So guys like that, it's totally cool and chill. But with Peter Cullen, he's a very humble man. He's a very respectable man. And I just wanted to say, and I just told him up straight that the only thing I said to him was that I just wanted to personally thank you, that you inspired me when I was a kid to pursue professional voice acting. And I fulfilled that dream. I'm able to put food on the table for my kids and a roof over their heads and clothes on their backs, partially because you inspired me when I was 5 to become what I am now. And I just wanted to thank you in person. And he teared up a little bit. He's like, it never ceases to amaze me all the different ways the thing I just did as a job has affected so many people in so many different ways. And while he was I think he was signing something. I was like, I actually got started in voiceover, you know, doing impressions of you when I was 5. And he's like, well, what did that sound like? So he actually asked me to do it. And I was like, Autobots transform and roll out. And he just kind of did the big eyes and he goes like, whoa, come here and give me a hug. And he actually asked me for a hug, which was, that was amazing to me. So, but no, I don't have him on speed dial where I can just call him up. Hey, you got any advice on,
Well, I was kind of curious because now that you're doing Optimus Prime,
well, I'm doing a Optimus Prime. I'm not.
Oh,
doing,
I understand.
I'm
I understand
doing
that.
Peter Cullen's. They wanted to do. What they kept telling me was new but familiar. They wanted to have. They called me the glue to the original series. So, the way I'm doing Optimus Prime, kind of brings you back to that. This is tied into the original show. This is a little bit like that, and it's kind of like a connection point. You know, so I'm like the bridge. There's a little bit of the original Cullen in there, but it's also something different. So that's.
Well, I was
just
curious.
What the director asks, and it actually was easier for me to do it that way.
Right, right.
So, yeah,
no, I was just curious because I know that he has said before that he holds that character very close to himself.
Oh, who wouldn't?
and that's his Optimus Prime. I didn't know if he had said something to you in regards to you doing this role.
No, not personally. I haven't seen him since 2011, I think, or 2010. It's been 2011. That was the last time I saw him.
Okay.
But yeah, there's not many voice actors that are the main character of a series, any cartoon, that is worldwide known for over 30 years. There's only a handful.
Sure.
There's been some that have been known for, you know, since the 90s. There's like a group of fans that are a fan of this one thing that most people don't remember very well. Or if I said Eek the Cat to some people, most people are like, Eek the what? I don't remember that. You know, but if you say Optimus Prime, everybody knows Optimus Prime.
Right. Exactly.
Over 30 years later, they know who he is. And it's synonymous with that voice. So, yeah, there's not many voice actors that have that thing.
Yeah, but think about the torch that's been passed on. Just think about that. I mean, that's amazing. It's amazing. Well, character has progressed.
It's a very small group of voice actors can say that. I mean, Gary Chalk, David Kay, Peter Cullen, Neil Kaplan, myself, and Rick Sellers, who does the voice of some of the toys. There might be a few others that have done some things for the game, maybe, or something online. But those are like the main ones that I know of that have done Optus, including me. So it's you can almost count that in one hand. Well,
yeah, over 30 years. I think, though, I have to correct you a little bit, though, when you said that you voice a Optimus Prime. As far as Combiner Wars goes, you are the Optimus Prime.
Right.
And that don't, is the don't sell yourself short, man. I mean, you're...
Yeah, I know what you mean. I just meant,
you're,
like...
You're doing great.
I'm talking about in general. Yeah, right. There's been many incarnations of Optimus, as all we all know.
So. Yeah, we actually had... I interviewed David Kay at TF Expo about a month and a half ago, and he talked a little bit about his Optimus Prime on Transformers Animated, and how he basically had to make him sound youthful. Making your Optimus Prime, and what are the things that you do and are directed to do to make him yours?
Well, they wanted him to be more. So he's a little bit like, at least from what I've worked on and what we've actually seen, especially in episode 3. He's a little bit like Optimus Primal was in Beast Machines, where he's more of a guy. He's not like doing yoga and, you know, meditating, but he's more of a guide, more of a sensei. He's trying to, you know, he's trying to help keep the peace. He's not trying to cause more war. You know, he's trying to get Windblade to calm down. He's not attacking her back. He's just dodging her attacks. He's sitting there trying to teach her how to fight while she's trying to kill him. So he's very reserved. He's obviously seen a lot of war. He's millions of years of war, and he's pretty much fed up with it. They finally have a fragile piece. They've got Autobots and Decepticons working together very loosely, but he's trying to maintain that because he's seen what war does. And he's afraid. If you watch the prelude, you'll see that he's afraid that what's going to end up happening, because especially with the Combiners specifically, because they're so big, they're so strong, they're going to end up destroying their own planet from within. And they're wrecking everything, and there won't be anything left. There won't be a home left. And he's trying to save he's always been trying to save his home, and doing it in a peaceful way. He doesn't want to kill anybody. He doesn't want to have to destroy anything.
One thing I've learned from this series so far is that, different from previous Optimus Primes, especially like Generation 1, where in Generation 1, that Optimus Prime was, you know, he was for peace, but he was all about, you know, I mean, if he needed to pick up his gun and use it, he would at the drop of a hat. Whereas the Combiner Wars Optimus Prime, I get more of the distinct feeling that he is more of a peacemaker than a fighter than anything.
What was going on inside my head was I was looking at because this one, unlike, because David Kay and Neil Kaplan, they both had a hard road to plow. They had to come up with a brand new version of the voice, and doing anything other than Peter Cullen is going to make fans upset, because they automatically, you know, they're synonymous. That word Optimus Prime and Peter Cullen's voice, they go hand in hand. Excuse me. And being told to do a different take on the character, doing a younger version, doing a totally different version, I mean, that's really hard, especially for a voice actor to be like, and when, it's one thing when you're just a voice actor and you're given a role and you come up, but when you're a fan of the franchise or you know a lot about the franchise, it can really get in your head. You're like, man, because then you start feeling the pressure, you know. So I started looking at the different versions of the Prime that this was based on. This is supposed to be a continuation of the original G1 cartoon. So you have the John Wayne version of Optimus Prime, but then you have the more serious, a little more adult version of Optimus Prime in the movie, and then you have this, you know, this peacekeeping Optimus. He's not the same Optimus Prime after he comes back, you know what I mean? So I kind of saw that evolution of the character between, you know, the swagger of Autobots transform and roll out. You know, that swaggery cowboyish, and then he comes to the point in the movie where he's, you know, I sacrificed myself to, and you know, that was a thing that never been done, especially in a kid's film. Kids are like, what, people can die? What's going on? But he was a lot more reserved in that. I mean, you could really see Peter Cullen's like acting ability in that thing. He's not just some guy who does a cool voice. I mean, he really showed his acting chops, because that had people just crying in the theaters. Mm-hmm. And but he that, you know,
until all are one,
he had that was more like And that kind of led into the return where he's trying to save everybody. He sacrifices himself a second time. Even though he's under the control of the Quintessons, he still manages to save the Autobots and the Decepticons. So, yeah, it was more based on that later version where he's tired of let's go wreck him and destroy him. And he's like, you know what? I'm done fighting. We don't need to fight anymore. If we keep fighting, there won't be anything left to fight for.
Just more reserved and, yeah. and
he's going to do what he's got to do to get the job done. But yeah, he's not, you know, going guns blazing. He's not shoot first, ask questions later kind
of
guy.
Now you talk about Combiner Wars, and it's more of a continuation of Generation One in the fact that I guess it's, you know, the saying, like it said in the 86 movie, till all are one. This is after all are one. Decepticons and Autobots are, like you said, loosely being peaceful together. And then you have Megatron that really don't want any part of it.
Megatron's happy, though. Megatron is happy as a lark, man. He doesn't have to fight the Autobots anymore. He can just fight whoever the heck he wants. He's like, bring it on.
Yeah. I don't care who you are.
He's basically getting back to his roots, too. He's going back to where he started in the arena and fighting.
Yeah. In the latest episode, I liked what he was saying to Windblade. It's like, I like your spirit, you know?
I like this one.
Yeah.
Jason doesn't know that I had to fill in for him when he wasn't there, so it was...
Jason, are you able to... Okay, I know you're still on here. Can
you hear me? It's just a little choppy, bro. That's all. Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's connection or if it's Google being Google.
Trying for Skype a while. Doesn't work. Google Plus. What?
I'm sorry, I didn't get it.
Okay. It's kicking out.
Yeah. If you're not able to get it fixed and everything, I openly invite you to come back once we can get these fixed.
He's like, I'll just
But I'll openly invite you to come back once we can get this issue fixed.
I will say the one last thing about it, but it was surreal and extremely cool because it's like when somebody gives you the opportunity to invest in the ground floor of something huge. And the way I was cast, where I just randomly got an email. I'd introduced myself. Machinima happened to be at Hasbro's SDCC panel, and I go by there every year. I go by the Hasbro panel, and I try to say hello to everybody and figure out who people are and thank them for all the hard work that they put in. And I mean, it's still my favorite brand in general as well, because my kids play with Hasbro toys. I still collect Transformers stuff. And but they happened to be there shooting, and I was like, I heard about this Combiner Wars thing, and several people who I work, we exchanged information, and then I don't forget how long it was later after that, but an email just popped up and like, hey, can you come out and meet us? And I'm like, yeah, I've got to be out there to record, and went in, and they're like, we want you to be the voice of Optimus Prime. I'm like, really? it was literally just it. Hey, nice to meet you. We want you to be voice of Optimus Prime. I'm like, say what to who now? But standing next to Jason and Frank and like the trilogy, that's what it felt like. It felt like the trinity of Transformers, almost the triangle between Megatron, Starscream, and Optimus Prime. And that was a really cool, like the foundational moment of something, hopefully something huge, and being on the ground floor. That was a really cool moment.
Absolutely. Jason says, "Bah, you're all too, you're all right too, Brian." And
what was that line you say? Transform and roll out.
Yeah, that was funny.
I absolutely, you guys have brought such joy to the table, especially Frank Todaro with his Starscream. You know, he's got that high pitch that you would expect from Starscream with a little gravel in it and in the character. And then
it's like you can sense by watching these, you can sense the spirit of G1 is still there. Mm-hmm. But it's also a combination of other things. It's also got a little anime feel to it, which is what they really wanted when they were talking about putting the series together. So it feels a little bit like some of the later shows that came after G1. It just feels like they kind of like the way I felt when I first watched Transformers Animated, where I felt like, oh, they're trying to throw in little nods to all this stuff from all these different Transformers things. And it feels like that again, but not in a funny, you know, younger audience way. It's finally for the grown-ups, you know, so we they can rip off Hot Rod's arm, and we're not going to be like, oh, don't look, kids. He's okay. He's going to be fine. He's still got the touch on one hand.
He had the touch. He had the power. But I was going to say to Jason's Megatron is the gravel, the it just captures Megatron so well as well. And I'm sitting here. I know you can hear me, but it's hard. It's like, okay, just listen to this.
It's like talking to the bumblebees that can't say anything.
Yeah. But I love it. I mean, it's it embodies the character well. You're spot on, and I'm just glowing about it because he like your Prime is you can tell he's been through so many battles, but he is at the point now, you know, he knew he lost the Great War, but at the same time he's like, all right, you know, this is a new chapter for my life. You know, and like you said, bring it on. You know, I don't care who it is. You know, and he's game for any fight. So I'm sitting here talking along and everything. And you know, Brett, and I know Chad, you've probably got questions, so I'm going to hand the floor to you for a few minutes here.
Well, John, I actually have one.
Okay.
What do you think about it being more adult and being focused toward, instead of being focused towards kids, it's actually focused towards, you know, our age group or closer to our age group?
I am totally fine with the fact that it's adult without being, you know what I mean, like R-rated with the, you know, the language, because, and that was like a concern, because I mean, I'm a very conservative person, and my first my first concern was like, oh, adult show, great, they're going to be having Optimus Prime dropping F-bombs. The fact that that it's adult in content without being adult in language, or, you know, because, I mean, I don't know, I guess they would be doing some kind of Energon drugs or alcohol. I really don't know how to, I mean, because a lot of it's the things that we consider adult, it's adult for Transformers. It's not adult for, like, other things, you know what I mean? So it's not like you're going to go into you know, a Kill Bill movie. My kids won't be too young to watch this as along with their parents without me having to worry about censoring something or muting something. And that, I really love that Hasbro has always been that brand that I could trust not to get me in trouble with the wife for letting the kids watch it. You know what I mean? Because I'll be honest, Power Rangers was one of those things where I couldn't let my kids watch it, because I have an autistic kid and I don't want him going and karate chopping his brother and sisters in the face. And so Transformers was one of those ones where it's not real people hurting each other. They're robots. You know what I mean? So it's a little bit different. And for some reason he's never gotten violent because of Transformers or whatever. And this one is a little more adult. So I do have to think about, maybe it's like a little too violent for just for him because of his disability, but it's something I can share with my kids and not worry about having to mute or anything like that. So it is for grown-ups. The story is a little more complex. It's not one of those, you know, it's not one of the toy commercials versions of the G1 episode where it's like, oh, we went through the space bridge and now we're tiny and an alien is playing with us. And it's not one of those things where everything is wrapped up in one episode. They start with a problem and at the end of the day, the same exact thing happened in every single episode where the bad guys created a new weapon, the Autobots came to save the day, the end. It's not like that. It's got a story. Amazing. It's got character development. What are these things doing in this cartoon?
Eric actually said on YouTube, he says, adult to me means morally complex, not necessarily for violence or sake or profanity for profanity's sake.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I mean, that
what I meant was,
sorry, go ahead.
What I meant was, is like, it's not Rat Trap. Obviously, it's not Rat Trap adult.
I see, where he's like,
the girls are walking around without their chest plates on or whatever he said in that one show. But you know, it is more complex.
It's more aimed at fans that have been fans for 10, 20, 30 years, not for the little kids. There's not a big goofy Grimlock bumbling around making jokes and a little robot with a stutter. And that's obviously targeted at, you know, my son Tyler's age, 10 and somewhere in that range. And this one's obviously for a little, but it is okay still for older kids to watch too, but it's mainly targeted at us guys. I mean, we're in our,
well, I mean, look at the toy line. Whatever,
and we're still watching cartoons.
Yeah, at the toy line.
I sit on the floor with my friggin' phone and cross my legs, crisscross Applecross style, and it's Saturday morning all over again, man. I mean, it's awesome.
I mean, it's, look at the toys. I mean, you've got the
RID toys. I'm not going to lie. The first episode, I literally sat there with all my little headmasters that I've bought recently and just sucking the kid all over again.
Oh, who did the voice for Computron?
I forget his name. And you'll find out this is not an insult on people. I'm just really, really bad with names. I can't remember my own kids' names, for crying out loud. I'm like, Ratch, Roy, what was your name? And don't lie to me, because I know you live here, and I'll figure out who you are. Oh, yeah.
But whenever I heard him, I mean, I just closed my eyes. I'm like, you know, I couldn't even be, if I wasn't watching the video, the Computron is like the datum, you know, he nailed it right on. Well,
to be honest, even though we recorded this, so we know about what's going to happen further along than you guys do, because we were actually there recording the scripts and we get the Animax, whatever. But we hadn't seen the full show. We hadn't seen the finished product yet. And that first episode, the fact that they don't talk like, you know, I am a robot, because the combiners always had this very, you know, because I'm big, I have to talk dumb, or I have to, even Computron, who's supposed to be super, you know, he sounded more like a very slow Mr. Spock or Data, or, you know, he had that kind of, you know, robotic talk. But these guys, they talk like the other characters talk. And that's something I've always wanted, because I'm like, it feels like these characters are more than just Frankenstein monsters that are joined together, you know, from five guys or six guys merged together into one character. You know what I mean? So I thought that was, I was like, oh, he's throwing jabs? Calling Computron a nerd? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
We're all thinking it. Minnesota just had the guts to say it. Just saying.
Ricky Hayberg, at Ricky FTW on Twitter.
So, yes, Ricky. Yes. Ricky, he's so fine.
He's so funny. Yeah.
It blows my mind.
The very first episode we see of Combiner Wars, obviously Computron gets offed. Minnesota gets offed. We're like, what's going on here? You know? Windblade is just going crazy on these guys. And then I believe what was the second episode we see your character?
Third?
Wait,
no, third? You see me at the end of the first and the second. I'm just kind of chilling and seeing what's going on. But that was the first episode. The reason why it blew me away so much was because they threw us right into action right off the bat. And there's only a handful of movies where you don't really know what you're going to get, or TV shows, or, you know, you don't know what you're going to get. You go there and then there's this mind blowing action scene that boom, you're freaking in the movie and you're like, holy crap. And you're like holding on your seat afraid you're going to fall out of it. And the fact that they started off like that rather than millions of years ago, such and such and such, you know, and they didn't go into this long documentary style narration thing and to catch everybody up on what's going on. They just freaking threw you into it. And you're like, wait, what's going on? And you have all these questions. And I love shows that make you question, like, what's going on? Why are they doing this? Where are they? How did they get to this point? And then they go back and start explaining what happened. And they suck you in a whole lot faster. And they put a lot of content into 5 minutes, I'm just going to say. And personally, I think it's pretty cool that they're using new styles of make, because if you really think about it, this is basically a YouTube-style video, and the fact that it's 5 minutes, it's digital. The streaming service. So that is the new medium. That's the new medium that kids and teens and that, you know, that's how they watch everything.
It's like us right here. I mean, we have this 2-hour show that, you know, we get on here and we talk about Transformers toys and cartoons and movies for 2 hours every day. And, you know, if it wasn't for a YouTube, we wouldn't really be here. You know, I mean, we have an audio only that, you know, I think our listenership would be even smaller.
Yep.
You know, and, you know, let's talk a little bit about your YouTube accolades here, the Honest Trailers.
Well, that's technically not my YouTube accolades.
Well, I know, but I mean, you do a lot of work for them. I know. I mean, you're not the only one that works for all.
I'm one gear in the machine. That's yes. Pretty much it. I may be a little bit bigger gear than I give myself credit for, but as far as I'm concerned, I'm just one piece of a puzzle, and it's a team effort to make it successful. So,
at least you're not a tool.
No, I'm a working part. I'm not a tool.
So have you?
I transform into a tool.
Wow. So, let's. I had a question here, and it just totally lost. Live television, people, live. Brett, let's swing it over to you. You're sitting there just looking off to the side. I'm gonna put you on the spot. Speak.
Well,
faster.
All my notes were answered. Well. Every one of them. I was gonna ask about Honest Trailers. I got my Peter Cullen in. You did write on there. It was written that your wife did inspire you to, when you were in your 20s, to push you into it. So I was going to ask you about that.
She's my friggin' angel, man. She is the whole reason that she doesn't realize that I give her so much credit. I keep telling her everywhere I go, I give you credit for what you've done. She's like, no, you don't.
Just remember, always mention your wife, mention her in good ways when it's recorded. That way you can play it back to her.
That's right.
Well, that's a good thing. And also, behind every great man is an even better woman.
Behind right. Every great man is probably a smelly pair of pants.
Well, it's a woman yelling at him, but that's beside the point.
Yeah.
But if she didn't yell at me, I would never have done this, man.
Well, see, there you go. There you go.
That's right.
No, that was my biggest question, and he answered it. So
in Combiner Wars, has there been talk of maybe doing more like a Titan Returns or, you know, of anything like that?
I'm going to have to pull an O.J. Simpson and say, I can't answer that question at this time.
Oh.
No, I really, you got me. We were told the best thing to do when we don't know is to say, we don't know. We don't know. So when we know, and then we're allowed to say we know, then you'll know.
Well, the reason I say that, and I'm kind of, you know, I'm just going to call it out here. I was told to ask John who he wants to see in a future season, if we do one.
Oh, well, if we're doing
who do you want to see?
If we're doing ifs, man, geez, Louise. Since we have, okay, I'll use common logic. We'll look at the characters that are in the show, and we'll look at the toys that are on the shelf. And so these are based on the Combiner Wars toys. And now that we've got the Titans coming out, we got the Headmasters. And I've always, I don't know what it is about Headmasters. I thought that was the coolest friggin' thing. And these are such good versions of those toys that I never even got because my parents are like, we're not buying for it. Buy them yourself. And I didn't have any money. So. but yeah, man, I look really forward to seeing the Headmasters in general, but Nightbeat specifically, really love Nightbeat. He was one of my favorites.
Okay. Before you go further,
you know,
if you were to land the role of Nightbeat, I'm going to put you on the spot. What would you like?
You know, I've always thought Nightbeat kind of had a cop kind of feel to him, you know, but I've always wanted to be able to voice a character in my own voice. So I guess just, you know, me being a cop.
What would that sound like?
Me playing a cop. Well, I'm not going to give my secrets away to some other voice actor that's sweeping and steal it away from me.
There you go.
I always keep like a back pocket of voices that I've never shared with anybody just in case. And I audition with them all the time, knowing eventually that voice is going to be perfect for something. And I use that voice as a foundation and build onto it if I need to have kind of a funny thing about if he stutters, does he have a lisp, does he have is he deeper, lower, higher, faster, slower type thing. So it basically, you take one starting point and then you add around to it. It's like a transformer. You start flipping and folding until you come up with something else. So yeah, I don't share secrets.
Well, I mean, fair enough. maybe how okay Well, never mind. That's just too far along those lines. Jason, I know you you dropped off and came back on. Let's try one more time.
Whoa! It's a miracle!
Yes, it worked! Uh-huh. Yes! We have Megatron, people!
Yes!
That works.
All this expensive equipment, and I have to unplug it in order to... Because I'm just using my internal mic.
Well, I have a Yeti mic here that is my normal recording mic that has a better, richer sound. And I'm using my webcam mic right now because this just decided to say, no, I'm not working tonight.
I'll be honest, I am totally flabbergasted. I've got a new iMac. I had to upgrade my whole studio. I booked some promos for ABC a few months back, and I had to upgrade my entire studio. So I'm using the Focusrite, whatever that box thing is called, and I got my original mic, but it's been supposedly repaired. And I got an iMac, and like he was talking earlier, I don't know nothing about Apple products at all except for my phone. And I'm literally the only thing I've done with this thing is record and send, and that's it. I'm afraid to do anything else.
See, and you're one step above me. I just plugged it in.
Once I found the link and clicked it, I didn't have to change anything. My mic, my camera. I'm like, it's a miracle. It's a miracle.
I know before we got on, I'm like, the best thing I can say is just reboot, because it seems like whenever Google changes things, rebooting seems to help fix things.
I'm liking film and television. Rebooting, yeah. Actually. Is a good
thing. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I made it in for the last 2 minutes.
Welcome to the sixth hour of...
Okay.
I was Megatron, and it was really fun. Bye.
Yeah. So, Jason, now that we have you on
for the party,
let's have your background and tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to work on Transformers.
Oh well, it's interesting the sort of parallels between John's beginnings and mine, just because like I started off doing impressions of characters that I like too, which, you know, I would be told when I was younger, you know, like, oh, that's very good, when it's like, I'm pretty sure that did not sound like Gilbert Gottfried when I was five, but maybe it did. But yeah, so I started off just kind of doing impressions when I was a kid, and that got me more interested in like theater and that sort of thing. So I ended up joining a theater troupe it was in high school. So I ended up doing that and getting more into sort of live performance, and that became film after a while. And while I was doing this, I did an impression of Mark Hamill's Joker that one of my friends was like, hey, you should put that on YouTube. And I'm like, no. But then I did, and that sort of ended up being a mainstay of certain gigs that I've gotten, like the stuff I do with Bat and the Sun, and you know, several things. Like if you look on my IMDb, like there's a lot of Joker in there, mm-hmm. Which is fine. You know, I have no objection to playing like, you know, the bad guy. So anyway, I'm just trying to sort of sum up. So high school, I was doing improv and theater and, you know, live acting. While on the side, I was kind of dabbling in YouTube voiceovery stuff. Which ended up being a pretty decent platform for kind of, you know, getting a sort of foot in the process of it, I guess. Like, you know, I would do voiceover dubs of things and improv stuff and song covers and things like that. Just sort of something to pass the time. It was very much more of a hobby. And then in college, when I was taking radio and voiceover courses, I really started to more actively pursue, you know, the networking aspect of it. And since then, I've been doing stuff with Bat in the Sun, and I got this sweet gig with Combiner Wars, and been doing a bunch of video games and things. So, you know, it's just, it's definitely escalated in the last few years, and that's been wonderful and a real blessing.
Now, as far as Transformers go, have you been a fan for a long time, or...
I freely admit, no, not really. I didn't really I didn't really, I mean, I grew up with the, you know, I would watch the show or reruns of the show or different iterations on occasion, but I was never really a huge diehard fan. Even going into Combiner Wars, I was kind of like, okay, Megatron is quote unquote the bad guy and Optimus Prime is quote unquote the good guy. And that one, I don't know. And that one, I don't know. And who's that? Oh, Starscream. That's right. You know, that kind of thing. So no, I didn't really know very much about it and kind of opted away from, actually diving too much into it when I got the role, cause I didn't want anything to like influence like performance too hard.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So working on the series, what has been the biggest challenge for you outside of, being unfamiliar with some of the other characters?
I guess one of the, things that kind of was tricky was, the fact that, you know, by the time it didn't sort of set in until I got in the booth where it's like, you know, oh, this will be great. And then I get in the booth and I'm like, oh, I'm Megatron. Oh, this is big. You know, it kind of finally dawned on me that, you know, oh man, this guy's a really like prolific character for a lot of people. You know, is this what he sounds like? And then I'm like, oh yeah, okay, that's what he sounds like. All right, now I remember. So it was just kind of, you know, looking to, I guess the biggest challenge to it was trying to come to terms with like what, you know, and Eric directed and helped to sort of morph this into like what it ended up sounding like, because I didn't really have much experience with what Megatron really sounds like. So I think the biggest challenge was just trying to find the right sound for this particular version of Megatron.
Well, I mean, I like how you got him. He sounds like Megatron, but a more grizzled and worn version of Megatron. And that fits this particular character very well, in my opinion.
Mm. Yeah, it was fun to, when I finally, you know, when I got in there, we got to see like the designs for the characters and stuff, and seeing like, you know, Megatron having like the Decepticon logo kind of scraped off from battle on his chest kind of, you know, brought the idea that, oh yeah, he's been doing this for quite a while at this point, you mm-hmm. know? So yeah, he should have kind of a more grizzled feel to him, I think.
So I'm going to pass off to Brett and Chad and let them ask you some questions here.
Sure.
What's been the toughest part? Has it been learning, the character, or just finding the voice, or, I mean, what was the toughest part as far as Combiner Wars goes for you?
As far as Combiner Wars goes for me, I think that one of the tougher parts of it was kind of like in terms of sort of this version of Megatron is trying not to go like too over the top, because, you know, like the instinct, because, you know, I knew rudimentary things about Megatron. And so, you know, trying not to go like too full on evil megalomaniacal warlord, because like he's not, you know, that in where we see him. You know, he's kind of chill. At this point, he's just kind of happy fighting and stuff like that, but not going out to take over anything or, you know, do anything too crazy. So it was interesting to make sure that I reined kind of that, you know, like too over the top aspect to it, kind of pull it in a little more.
So is there anything else that you've done that in the past that is actually that you were able to draw from to get this character to where he is? Or was this pretty much, all right, I'm just going to take this and I'm going to kind of run with it and try and figure it out as I go?
This really was kind of just figure it out as I go. Because I didn't really have, you know, like I said, many preconceived notions of what Megatron sounds like or acts like. And this is, you know, kind of a different stage of his existence. So, you know, with Eric's directing and writing and, you know, all the different scripts and material and direction we were going, that really helped me to, you know, kind of understand what this version of Megatron is and how he differs from other versions. And also, I think I mentioned at the San Diego Comic-Con panel that the voice and the inflection is somewhat based on one of my uncles. he's very much like kind of varies in intensity to the point that his voice almost sounds different at points. Like he, you know, because Megatron will, you know, start kind of here and then eventually he might growl a little bit and things like that. So, you know, going that back and forth depending on intensity was kind of based on, you know, what I'm very used to hearing from at various family gatherings. So.
I know Eric, he says on YouTube, what was also fun making working with Jason was to make Megatron halfway between Frank Welker and Hugo Weaving from the live action movies, with the new concept of him being happy.
Yeah, it's actually a very interesting because, you know, in voiceover and acting in general, like one of the main points of, you know, getting to a character is like know what the character wants in a scene and overall. Well, like what does the character want? So that way you can drive inflection to that point. And what was interesting about this is that Megatron doesn't kind of want anything. Like he's satisfied, which is really interesting because, you know, taking a character like Megatron, who's, you know, been such sort of a power hungry character, and suddenly he realizes that this is what he wants. He just enjoys the fight. Was something that was very interesting to kind of pursue, and gives a nice sort of target to you know, figure out what he wanted in various scenes, and kind of add the inflection from there.
It's like in this latest episode here, he sits back and listens to the exchange between Windblade and Optimus Prime, and he's like, I like this girl, you know. He's like,
oh yeah, oh, he's all about her notion of just like, you know, we could go fight, and he's like, yeah, let's do that. That's a good idea, Prime. I don't want to talk. Go away. Let's just go fight. Yeah, I want to get that Starscream. Yeah.
So, Brett, do you have something?
Well, I was just thinking, Frank Welker. You're following Frank Welker. What are your thoughts on that?
the icon, the legend, Frank Welker.
Exactly. Yes.
No pressure.
Yeah, no, none at all. It just makes me, apparently it reduces me to like weird, like James Mason noises. It's definitely interesting to sort of look at the line of different people who have voiced Megatron. Because, you know, now that I've done the show, I'm going back on like and looking at that stuff and seeing what everybody else has done and what it all sounds like. And I'm like, man, some of these are like so different that like it really does open up a whole bunch of different, you know, vocal interpretations for the character that I think all work for the individual designs. And I think they all work for the shows that they're contained in. So it's interesting following, you know, Frank Welker and any number of the other wonderful, talented voice actors. It's daunting, but it's a great relief to me that a lot of people seem to enjoy it.
Well, the other thing I was thinking of is, and John talked about this, about it being more of a mature audience, kind of broadening the character in ways that the kids' G-rated cartoon couldn't do. Do you think that you will be able to expand Megatron in that aspect?
Yes. I think that, like, you know, again, this version of Megatron was not what I was I usually play bad guys, surprise. And so it was interesting to, you know, hear that I got Megatron, and then this version of Megatron is, you know, he's a jerk, but he's not necessarily, you know, wah, evil and things like that. So it was definitely, it's definitely kind of a different side to, Megatron, which is, you know, that even when he's content, he'll still make fun of you. So. That's definitely an interest. That's the kind of sarcastic Megatron is definitely a Megatron I can get behind.
All right. I think you're going to have a lot more fun, and you'll be able to broaden him with this. Cause I think, you know, they're not as much restrictions.
Mm-hmm. I hope so. Cause I think that that's kind of the goal with like this show, is to sort of build on what's there and, you know, like really reach an older audience, a more mature audience. And, you know, because, I mean, some of the episodes are, you know, like people, you know, in a room talking. And that's something that, you know, like really is, I mean, I don't know. I enjoy quiet moments as much as I enjoy, you know, robots fighting each other. So I think that those moments are just as poignant and important and well acted as any of the, you know, episodes where everybody's, you know, rolling around in the dirt, Megatron and Optimus. And so, yeah, I think that this does broaden sort of the what everybody expects from a Transformers show. I think that this does add to that, add some more layers for different characters and for the story overall.
Right, right. But, I mean, we talked about this before, too. I think that it you have to, even kids nowadays, and, of course, adults and everything, they want a more mature. They want a storyline. They don't want the old cartoon where something happens and the next week, oh, yeah, that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. They want a continuation. They want a storyline, and they want a, you know, they want the characters that they can get behind that evolve. And I think you got a really good chance of doing that, especially in this format.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this particular format is definitely proving to, and especially if you watch the episodes all together, like I'm really waiting until, you know, the final episode is out before I watch them all in one string. But a few of my friends have done it and they say that it plays really well and it feels really natural. So I'm really excited to see that.
Whenever I was going back this afternoon and watching them as a refresher, I watched them consecutively. And, you know, whenever you watch them individually, you're like, I want more. You know, it ended too soon. But then if you watch them consecutively, the story does play out. It's like each scene. If you're watching a television show, it's like you're watching NCIS, and you're watching a scene with these two characters, and then the scene switches back to the coroner's office with these two characters, and then it switches back to the field. It has that feel if you're watching them consecutively.
Right. I will say that I was watching it on, what is that, Go 90?
Mm.
I was watching it on that, and it'll do the episodes, and then it has a cut before it goes to the next one. And I jumped on it, and I had no idea how many episodes there were. And I found myself going, I hope there's another episode. And it would kick on. All right, I got another episode. And it got to 5, and I'm like, God bless it. Done.
So, yeah, I love when that happens, when you really, really want the next one.
Right. But I was waiting for them, and they would kick and kick. And then finally the number 5 came in. That was it. So I'm like, oh. So, yeah, the story does pull you in. It really does.
Eric said online about the character Megatron. He says he's one of the most underutilized characteristics of Megatron that he wanted to exploit when writing it was that Megatron is the one with the highest emotional intelligence, and that he's incredible at playing people off of each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did mention that as a sort of motivating factor when we started going. And then now that I'm watching the episodes, because, of course, you know, like we record this in pieces. And so I really, going into the show, I was like, well, I'm going to sit down for this ride because I have no idea, no recollection of what happened. Okay, here we go. You know, and then you just sort of push play and you're like, oh, didn't see that. That was excellent. And nope, didn't see that. And oh, I guess I did say that. I don't remember. I've slept since then. But yeah, there was definitely like when Eric would describe what Megatron was feeling in a scene or what he was thinking or what he was trying to do. It was interesting. It's interesting to see that played out in the animation where you can hear, you know, like Megatron goading Optimus on, you know, like you couldn't pull the trigger back then and you still won't and stuff like that. So yeah, it's really, really interesting to see that play out and hear John's response back to it and stuff like that. Like it's very, I think it plays really, really well with Megatron sort of digging his fingers into everybody's brains and seeing what he finds.
Awesome. John, are you still with us? John?
Prime.
Right.
Yes.
Aha. I want to ask you guys if you're interested to do something a little bit of fun here, as if this hasn't been fun. Hopefully it's been fun. For you. a little ad lib here as your characters. Let's I give you a scene here, and you two play off of each other as if you're in the studio as your characters, and let's just see what erupts here. Just go as long as you guys want to go, and see where it goes.
Well, I got 2 minutes, so it's okay. Gonna.
Okay. Optimus Prime and Megatron have met each other in a dark place, and they're fighting over a teddy bear. Go.
You're so adorable. I shall call you Softimus Prime.
You'll call it nothing, Prime. It's mine. You destroyed my last one.
I found it first. Finders keepers, losers weepers.
Prime, you know my collection is incomplete.
This is not a Beanie Baby. You won't want it.
Of course I do. It's like a larger Beanie Baby, but without the beans. They won't leak out all over my floor, and my cat won't eat it.
It's too soft and cuddly for you. It won't fit in your collection.
Oh, I suppose you're... You know what? Tell you what. You keep this one, and we'll see if we can find a cheaper one on eBay for me. That way everyone's happy, especially you.
Do you want to, you know, go get coffee?
Well, I was hoping you would ask, but I'm broke.
I hear Starbucks has pumpkin spice.
Oh, that's perfect. It's on you, though, because there's not much money to be made in arena fighting. No one's placing bets anymore.
They don't serve Energon. There won't be getting any drunk this time.
There's you. I love me my pumpkin spice.
That is absolute gold, guys. Well, I want to thank you guys for joining us. If you are listening to the show or watching the show and haven't checked out the Combiner Wars series, I highly urge you to. If you're on mobile, like on the Verizon network, check it out on the Go90 app. Just go to the Google Play Store and search for Go90, where I guess it's on the Apple Store as well. Yes, it is free. Also, check out Go90.com if you're on any other thing. That's what I watched it on this afternoon on my big screen TV. I hooked it up to my laptop.
I'm jealous. That sounds amazing.
Yes, and it looks great.
I plugged it into the thing at Walmart so it played on all the screens at the same time.
That is gold. Check out the show. Check out John and Jason and Lana and all the great characters that you've brought forth with us to the Combiner Wars. I want to thank everyone from Machinima that has helped make this possible. I know we've been in talks for this for several weeks now, and a lot of back and forth, and I hope we can do this again sometime with more characters. And you guys are always welcome back, John. Like I said, this is the second time you've been on, and it's always a pleasure having you on too.
Hey, Jason. Remember that one time we were on that one show where he did robot voices? That was awesome.
That was amazing. And then we said hi afterwards and finally met, and we were cool.
Do you remember the thing you said when you're like, what's the thing you said? Transformers are all out.
Yeah, I was when cool. I was Primus Mega. Yeah, that character.
Was cool.
Oh man.
All right, real quick, another quick ad lib. Reverse roles. Prime, you are Megatron. Megatron, you are Prime.
Am I doing which version am I doing? Jason's
And you're coming back from the from Starbucks.
Oh,
I can't believe it was too soon to get a pumpkin spice latte.
Nonsense! This is exactly it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. No one gets theirs now. It's perfect. Everyone goes in the morning. There's no line.
I started having coffee at 6 o'clock this morning.
I've injected it directly into my engine.
I'm totally jacked to get back in the arena.
Shall we do it again next Tuesday?
Let's start a book club.
I'll bring my bear.
All right, guys. Thank you all so much for joining us. Thank you, Eric, for your comments on Twitter. Some great stuff there. Thank everybody for joining us. Brett, Chad, do you all have any closing questions?
I just think that you guys are awesome. The pumpkin spice latte, I about rolled out of my chair.
Rolled out of your chair?
Rolled out. I see that. Wink, wink.
But thank you both for being on. Thank Lana or Lana for being on. That was awesome. You guys were great, man.
Thanks, absolutely, buddy.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
The only thing I can think of is don't be surprised at your next convention if you get a teddy bear.
Or a lot of Starbucks.
Or some Starbucks coupons. Yes.
Starbucks and teddy bears.
If only I drank coffee, darn it.
Softimus Prime.
Yeah, that's a real toy. I pulled that from real life.
I have one somewhere. I don't know. But
transforming stuffed animal. Can ask for more.
It had the Popple technology.
Are we allowed to plug our social media things?
Absolutely. Plug your social media and your next work if you want to.
At Epic Voice Guy on literally everything. I'm in the middle of refocusing and retooling and relaunching my YouTube channel to get back to just doing funny stuff with voices like I always wanted to do. And Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, it's all at Epic Voice Guy. And I've got some pretty cool stuff coming up. And you can hear me in Dishonored 2 coming out November 11th and Snarf Quest Tales this month. And you can hear me as Optimus Prime on Go90 right now.
Snarf Quest Tales? Is that what it was?
Snarf Quest, yeah, it's a thing.
it has connotations of Thundercats for
me. Everybody keeps saying that, but apparently there's a totally different Snarf out there.
Apparently. Jason, what about you?
I was still stuck on Snarf myself. I was like, wow, that's a whole game.
How many amazing. People say that they're stuck on Snarf? Let me tell you.
Yeah, well, you can quote me on that. my handles on most of the internet is Lord Jazor, LordJazor, all one word. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Insta-Twitter, you know, the whole bag. And currently I have some video games coming out on Steam and PS4. I've got Battle Rights coming out. I've always a handful of characters in that. The Letter is a horror visual novel that's coming out. There's a whole bunch of stuff. You can look it up on the internet, I suppose, or on my page, which is Jason Marnoka, voice actor. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for joining us once again. And John, what are you doing?
Come in close, John. It's okay.
The camera was on the whole time?
Are there people in this thing?
I'm so glad I wore clothes.
Hello? Is this thing on? All right, guys. Thank you all again once again so much for joining us on TFYLP. This has been episode number 215. I'm Duran, along with Brett, Chad, and these funny guys right here. Wow. The ad-lib thing will live forever. You know that, don't you? All right. Thank you all for joining us.
I dropped my mic, but it's attached to the stand.
I dropped mine, but it's in my computer.
guys, thank you all so much. See you next time.
See you guys. Pleasure.
This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, a presentation of tftalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@tfylp.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening, and we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.